This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, that's shopify.com/reddevils.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We're going to reflect on the Everton win on Friday night. We're recording late on Sunday evening. We're trying to fit in podcasts into Manchester United's packed schedule at the moment as well. We've got the Charlton quarterfinal in the League Cup to look forward to. We've got Vout updates, which I'm sure you're all tuning in for, and other assorted Manchester United transfer issues to discuss. Let's introduce you to our merry men today. Then we've got Andy Mitten and Carl Anker with us. Evening, gentlemen.
Evening.
Carl, you were there on Friday night. Standard home win.
Yeah, it's getting there, isn't it? Anthony scores in the first four minutes, and United had a opening period where you're going, hang on, this could be onto an eye dinner. There could be three or four goals. Everton got a little bit of aggression there, and then you're going, oh no. You know, you remember the fear of the old United. But second half, Marcus Rashford did Marcus Rashford things. And this is what United do now. They're able to grit and grind and score more than one goal and get a win in a way that's quite pleasing. They look like a vaguely competent football team. And considering how bad last year was, I'm going to enjoy saying that when it happens.
Yeah. Are we bored yet, Andy?
No, I think it was notable. I think Marcus was man of the match, as Carl alluded to. I think we should mention David De Gea's mistake, which led to Manchester United's run of consecutive clean sheets.
I've seen that.
Like, I can see you shaking your head.
I've seen it 100 times, and I still can't work out what exactly happened or what was trying to happen. Yeah. I don't know.
It was a real five-a-side mistake. So I'm going to assume he's hoping to drop down to his knees when the ball comes through. And sort of do a long barrier technique.
But he didn't collapse, did he?
Yeah. So he, very often De Gea does that. If you're in a cricket, he sort of drops and puts his knee to cover the gap so he can't get nutmegged. And that's what I was half expecting him to do. And he just didn't do it, as if he forgot. Utterly bizarre. And then again for the second goal that Cavalier scored and was chalked off for offside, his hand was on the post again. And I was again like, haven't you learned your lesson here? Yeah, really, really bizarre 90 minutes of De Gea. Again, made a couple of good saves, but again, had two or three of those moments where you go, right, this is a nice problem that Ten Hag needs to sort out before it becomes a nasty one.
United are winning. The win rate under Ten Hag is 73% now. We've not come close to that in the post-Ferguson years. I was really worried about a replay because that's the last thing Manchester United needed. Thought the team looked really confident at the start, and we're not getting a game where they all click in and play brilliantly, but you're still getting 7 out of 10. And Ferg used to say 8 out of 11 will do you. And we're seeing that with Manchester United. They're winning all the time. 7 straight wins. It's a really, really good record. Another full house at Old Trafford. 9,500 Everton fans. Of course, it was a home draw because they always are at the moment. But no, we've complained that the team have not been scoring enough goals. Another 3 goals have gone in there. And while Carl said Anthony might need a bit of a talking to, he's not hitting the heights, he did score with his right foot, which isn't his natural foot. And I think Ten Hag's just looking at all of the players, and he's always got 2 or 3 who are of concern to Manchester United fans. And Anthony would be one of them at the moment. There are a couple of others, but I'm trusting in his methods. The end result is that Manchester United are winning every game they play at the moment. If we can say that in a week's time, I'll be absolutely buzzing.
Yeah, definitely, considering what's coming up in 2 weeks' time as well. Especially now there's another game with Crystal Palace being arranged away at Selhurst Park between the Derby and Arsenal in the Premier League. I'm going to come back to Marcus Rashford in a moment, I think, because there's a couple of points on him. But we were talking about Anthony there, Carl. You've written about the quotes. A friend of mine, Fred Caldiera, did the interview with him after the game against Everton. And he used the word that he had a shock, which he seemed to sort of suggest that it was a personal issue, I think, of some description. He didn't elaborate. But, sort of a strange admission in some senses to say that something happened and then not explain what it was and leave it hanging like that. What did you make of it?
I think it's important to remember how young Anthony is, not just in terms of physical age, but also, you know, he's not made 15 appearances for Manchester United. He's just got here. He's living in Paul Pogba's old house.
Is that right?
He's living in Paul Pogba's old house in the outskirts of Manchester.
Is he redecorated?
I think that he's... There was like a video of it and he showed around the pool table and it's got PP on it still.
Oh, so nice.
It's that sort of thing, right? Obviously, we're always going to talk about the amount of money spent on Anthony. It was 100 million euros. He stopped, you know, basically went on strike at Ajax to help force a remove. The idea was Ten Hag wanted him now because Anthony was supposed to be the player who understood Ten Hag's way of playing better than anyone. So the idea was he'd hit the ground running. And he's not. He's had some teething problems. He's looked a bit nervous and a bit raw. And the injury problem he had before the World Cup meant that he didn't get enough sort of reps at a very crucial time once the team was coalescing. So there's that.
There's a but though, isn't there, Carl? And you wrote about it in The Athletic. There's a piece that's up there on Marcus Rashford's display on Friday night that people can go and read. We'll talk about some of the bits in there about Rashford in a moment, like I just teased a moment ago. But in that you say that Anthony provides clarity and energy that United have often gone without on the right wing. What exactly did you mean by that?
So I think if you look at, you know, across Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time, the right-hand side was Dan James, and then eventually another striker who was, you know, the plan was he was going to go through the middle. So there wasn't really that right-sided player who was going to make it their own. Daniel James preferred playing on the left. And for ages, there was just this big problem with where everything was going on the left-hand side, and teams knew you could pack now on the right. Left-hand side, because the right was Wan-Bissaka and another player, and nothing would really happen. And now there is something there. And yes, okay, it is very, very obvious that Anthony wants to cut inside on his left and shoot. And there were two or three times against Everton where defenders were just sort of dropping, jockeying and going, go on then, try it. Like you can try and cut inside.
Because there's no option to go on the outside, is there still?
No.
Beating a man still to him at the moment seems too much almost, so, which is bizarre for a winger of that caliber.
He's not got explosive pace, right? He's not rapid in the same way Marcus Rashford is rapid. You know, he's not quick in the same way that, let's say, even Antony Elanga can be really quick running in behind. So that is a problem. He's not going to beat the fullback to cut inside because he's just so quick he can't do it. He also doesn't have, you know, Ian Robin's repertoire of tricks. The thing they always said was, how did Robin cut inside and shoot all the time? And the thing was, he didn't do it the same way. He, like a boxer, he sort of had four or five different jabs and feints, and I'm bobbing and weaving in my chair. You can imagine that's what Robin did. And Anthony has very, very clear, I'm dropping my shoulder now. You can tell I'm going to do it. And now he's playing the Premier League. Defenders are bigger, defenders are quicker. They're just stopping him.
Smarter, aren't they? Yeah.
So I tweeted this before, and I'd say, because he's not explosively quick, he can either, you know, you either have a coach say, here's a bunch of Iron Robin tapes, learn how to bob and weave and put some trickery on it. Or you get another coach go, we're going to put you in the weight room and say, we're just going to make you so strong that when you cut inside, you can use your other arm to fend the other guy off. Or what I think is more likely to happen is Ten Hag is going to keep getting in his ear going, you have a right foot, use it. But at the moment,
a bit of it is confidence, isn't it? A bit of it is belief. Do you feel that, Andy, as well with him? Because, you know, Carl's right, he is young. You know, it's a new league, it's a new country, it's a new team, etc., etc. You know, he's not the first one who's not made an immediate impact.
He's a kid from a favela in Sao Paulo, and the culture shock obviously helps him a lot that he moved to Holland first and started to learn English there. But you need to look into his background and the part of Sao Paulo that he's from. I spoke to some people in Sao Paulo recently who knew him, and one of his coaches said he was actually a very shy kid. He was suspicious of everything. It was hard to earn his trust. But at the same time, with the ball at his feet, he was brave. He always wanted to compete. He had a strong personality. He was fearless. He was curious. And I think he's finding his way, and we just have to cut him a bit of slack in his first season in Manchester. I think that Ten Hag, having worked closely with him, pushed hard for him, regardless of the cost. And this is on him. And I think you've got to back the manager's decision there. I think Anthony's one of these players or humans who likes to prove people wrong. And his development was not straightforward. He wasn't always playing in the position that he now plays in. He didn't have a prestigious goal scoring record as a youngster. It was put to me that he wasn't a natural goal scorer. Didn't come easy for him. This wasn't Neymar. This wasn't Robinho. He only really started to be noticed in the under-20s team at Sao Paulo. When he was in the under-15s team, he was just another player. He took longer to flourish. He took time to settle and flourish. So if this is happening again, then it might be worth waiting for him to flourish. We've seen moments both of extreme skill and also frustration, of course, probably the most famous one. Was the Sheriff game at Old Trafford, and we discussed that on the podcast. But I'm inclined to cut him a bit of slack. He's a young lad, and hopefully he will come good.
He's an interesting player in that he's very clearly got something up top. He's very clearly good in the classroom, from what I'm seeing. What Ten Hag says, do this, you know, when the ball comes here, stand here and do these things. I think he gets that. But there are times where he's receiving the ball in open space, and he does something, and I go, hang on. Why did you do that? And there were maybe two or three passes into open space. The Martial, Rashford, they do a couple of passes. The ball goes out wide and everyone starts flooding forward. And Anthony slowed it down because you knew immediately he wanted to cut inside on his left. And you're just going, if you just went on the outside, this would be money. And I think that will be the next big thing. I had a talk with Ten Hag after the game about Rashford's working with his left foot. And about how you sort of develop that. And he made it clear that he wants his players to learn these stuff, but also admits sometimes you just don't have the time.
Yeah, so much of it these days is just recovery and preparation for the next game, just physical stuff, isn't it? You know, there's so little time between matches. Let's talk about Marcus Rashford then. I've teased it a couple of times. One of my favourite quotes of the season so far, and it didn't come from someone connected with Manchester United, it came from the manager of Everton, Frank Lampard. Nobody can stop Rashford when he's like he was tonight. That's great, Andy, when you're getting up opposing managers saying that about one of your players, isn't it? He just goes from strength to strength to strength. It's brilliant to see.
And he's right. He is wonderful to watch when he's fit, when he's in full flow, doing which fans love, which is watching him run at players, beat players.
The directness.
Yeah, he was on it right from the start. You combine that with his control. I think his physical side of his game has really come on this year under Erik ten Hag. I know he was told to go more for his 50-50s to win the balls. A good example of that was the goal at Wolves recently, mm-hmm. where physically he pushed his way through and scoring. He's becoming prolific. He scored yet again. What is it, 6 or 7 games now?
Because 5 goals in 5 games. First time he's done that in his career.
And he wasn't prolific before that. He was playing all right. He was having a decent season, but he's scoring all the time now. Would he be Manchester United's player of the year so far? It'd be him or Casemiro, wouldn't it? He's a star player, and he's having a really good season, and I think it's great to see. And if he can do that against Manchester City and Arsenal, as he has done before.
Let's see it, yeah.
Then we're cooking.
Yeah, in the past, actually, Carl, he has been someone who's raised his game for the big matches, hasn't he? His record against Liverpool and City and the other top sides usually shows up for those games, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's actually been these sort of matches that have been the issue in some ways rather than those big games.
Yeah. And it wasn't too long ago under Mr. Mourinho where it looked as if Rashford, you know, people were saying Rashford needs to go out on loan to Everton to figure out what his attacking game would be. I think, yeah, Andy's bang on. The physicality to Rashford's game is an entirely new element. His upper body strength is something I'm not seeing before. He's got the thing that Anthony needs to get, where you can just barrel through a defender if you want to get it. I think the second assist for the own goal that Connor Cody converted, that's the really impressive bit, because it's Rashford going on the outside on the left and then crossing the ball with his weaker foot. Those are things that Rashford didn't do with great frequency before. You know, we've spoken in this podcast about how when Rashford gets annoyed, he tries to not make the fullback or
knuckleball shot.
He's got the knuckleball shot when he's getting really, really annoyed. And we're not seeing that. He's still not making people, which is very pleasing, but we've not had that moment where his head's gone down and he sort of shook his head and gone, I'm going to knuckleball it. I don't care what happens next, because he's now got four or five extra tricks, four or five extra bits to his game that he can do instead. The fact he's got a signature celebration now is kind of fun. What do you want to call it, Ian, when he points to his head?
I don't know. I've been considering this. So is this definitely him? He's not seen it from someone else. It's someone.
This appears to be him. So he's done it after four goals.
The mindset man.
Yeah. And he's done it on his Instagram when he's just hanging about with his fiance and his friends.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess this is his sign that he's locked in.
It's the mindset man, isn't it?
Mindset man, locked in, the thinker.
Yeah.
Listeners, yeah. Please let us know what we're called.
The Withington, because that's where he's from. And everyone says he's from Withenshaw, but actually he started out in Withington. And Withington is a good red area. Blues will disagree with me. But yeah, give that place a bit of credit for the development in Marcus when he was a kid before he moved over towards Withenshaw.
Created two of us, Withington.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were doing this on Friday night, we'd have felt confident, wouldn't we, about United's chances moving forward in the competition. But a lot of Premier League teams are out, Andy. I think as many as 10, actually, could be missing by the time the fourth round comes around with replays and matches still to take place. And Reading in the next round at home again. I'm expecting a tweet at some point to update us on what the odds of however many straight home draws it's been now in the FA Cup and the League Cup. But, you know, they're in the quarterfinals of the League Cup this week as well. A game that Manchester United expect to win. We'll preview that game in a bit, because obviously Andy's done a brilliant interview with Charlton's manager ahead of that game. A massive Manchester United fan. His name's on a seat in the Stretford end, even, which we'll talk about in a bit. But this is looking very encouraging, isn't it?
I've saved the odds for this podcast. 255-1. And that's from Duncan Quinton, who's a listener of this podcast.
Is that all?
That's the odds on getting 8 consecutive home draws. It doesn't sound a lot, does it? But
no, it doesn't, does it?
I'm not the bookmaker.
The last away one was Leicester City, the defeat to Leicester City in the quarterfinals.
That's right. Yeah, 2021. Yeah. So from what I've gathered, the odds keep doubling. So if we get a 9th and 10th one. I just wonder now, that will the final be switched to Old Trafford? Because Manchester United seem immune from playing any domestic cup games away from Old Trafford. And Reading was one of them Derby County type clubs who Manchester United kept getting drawn against. This is the 5th time since 2007 that Manchester United have been drawn at home to Reading. It's bizarre. And you're quite right to talk about the big Premier League clubs who've gone out. The draw's been really good for Manchester United. And I don't think every season ticket holder who is in the automatic cup scheme is as infused by all his home draws, because your money gets taken out straight away, whether you like it or not. There's a lot of direct debits there. And it's becoming, I'm not going to say ridiculous, but it's just mad how many home games there are at the moment. But the FA Cup is looking decent for Manchester United. Of course, at some point, you're going to draw, you know, Manchester City in the semi-final, and that's going to be the real test of it. But it's a competition United really should be going to win and should be beating Reading in the next round. No excuses.
If you want to read more about United's win on Friday, of course, you can go to The Athletic and have a look at the articles on there. If you're not a subscriber, you can sign up now with our special podcast offer of £1.99 a month for a year when you go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't listen to the sensationalists. The Athletic, especially Talk of the Devils, is the best place to get trustworthy, unvarnished information during the silly season. Here is Laurie Whitwell, who only a few days ago told us that January was going to be a quiet month for Manchester United.
Hi guys, I'm well aware that I am ripe for an Ian Irving wind-up, given I suggested United might go January without signing a striker, and now here we are. I'm quite glad though that my reply to Sam Billings, the England international cricketer, was on the money at least. He responded to my tweet about the last Talk of the Devils podcast asking, are we in for a striker? And I said definitely, and it would be a loan or a low-cost option. And obviously that was flagged by the aggregators. The word definitely was capitalised in certain places. So yeah, I'm glad that they are definitely after a striker. Wout Weghorst, though, is the name that's surprising everyone, I suppose. It was quite a whirlwind couple of hours on Saturday night when this news broke. It was originally broken by Santi Aurora. I had actually got a tip about Weghorst the night before from somebody over in Holland, and I kind of wasn't really sure whether it was legitimate or not. Asked around, but wasn't able to get anything substantial until it broke elsewhere. And Andy Jones and Adam Lenthal were brilliant at supporting it from different aspects as well, in terms of Besiktas and Burnley. On reflection, it makes a lot of sense from Erik ten Hag's perspective, and the fact that he's gettable and the fact that he very much fits this loan option, because actually, sort of further to my information at that point in the week, it came to me that United would only do loans, and it wasn't even a low-cost deal that they wanted to do. They don't want to give a two-year contract to a player that's, you know, out of contract this summer just because they're cheap. Now, Wout Weghorst, he obviously got a contract at Burnley and he's over on loan at Besiktas. They have held talks about it, United, with Burnley and the player. I think he's up for the move. He's pushing for it. You can see why he would want that. But it's a complicated one because Besiktas have a €10 million option to buy. So, you know, would they actually relinquish that? And also Burnley, they would probably want compensation because there's an asset there for them. So I think Besiktas would need financial remuneration. I think Burnley might as well. So it'd be an interesting how that all shakes down. But yeah, certainly there's been talks about Weghorst, and I could see this one happening. It's still early days and United do have other targets. You know, there's a list of strikers, but the pool isn't vast and he does tick quite a few boxes, albeit he didn't have a great time at Burnley last season. There's also this idea that actually there were some clashes with Burnley teammates. Confidence, he certainly has that, bordering on arrogance. I mean, that was certainly what some teammates, I think, felt, and it didn't really work out for him there. But I think United will look at that and think, actually, he's somebody that would not be overawed by Old Trafford. It's been a big pillar of what Erik ten Hag's tried to instill with all his signings, that kind of aspect of character. It was the reason why they went after Marko Arnautovic, and obviously that had huge backlash and was aborted. This one, actually, a lot of people, you know, are kind of dismayed or uninspired by Wout Weghorst being flagged, but quite a few people are okay with it. You know, see him as a 30-year-old striker who's, you know, played at the World Cup recently. I mean, for me, scored, you know, the best goal of the World Cup. That moment when he equalised against Argentina was a kind of wow moment. And he's obviously got a good record in Turkey, sort of 1-2. And for the circumstances, yeah, for a 6-month loan, you can see why Erik ten Hag would be after it, and he offers something else up front. Obviously, that there's wider questions to be asked about United's recruitment structure and why we're here again. It's not quite the same situation as Odion Ighalo, who they had to get in from China. But yeah, it's in that kind of bracket. But if Erik ten Hag wants him, which he does, and I think he might well have spoken to Louis van Gaal about this, that they're quite close, and van Gaal obviously had Weghorst at the World Cup, then you could see why it's a goer. But keep your eyes peeled, because it is a complicated deal and it's not at the advanced stage yet. They're still having talks about how it could actually shake down, because it's not straightforward. It would be Burnley having to recall him from his loan, but Besiktas would have to agree to that, and then it would be a new loan from Burnley to Manchester United.
Andy, Wout Weghorst, really?
Really, and if this is who the manager wants, I think you've got to back him. He's got a compromise. The money's been spent. The credit card is maxed out. Manchester United are not going to be signing anyone and giving him a 2 or 3 year contract. And when Erik ten Hag talked about all the different players and strikers that he liked in that big long interview just over a month ago, of course he's going to say he likes world-class players, but clubs don't want to let him go. We're not going to be seeing a repeat of the transfer windows when Manchester United spent $55 million on Bruno Fernandes. And it does seem odd that a player who's perceived to have failed at Burnley and has gone to Turkey suddenly ends up at Manchester United. But I think Erik ten Hag knows a lot more about him than any of the Manchester United fans listening to this. And I'm curious. I've got my doubts. This isn't like a Casemiro shoe-in where you go, world-class player, he's going to come in and do absolutely brilliant. But even then, loads of Manchester United fans had doubts about that. So if he does sign, or if it is somebody else, I think they'll be given a fair chance by Manchester United fans, mainly because they trust the manager, they like the manager, the team's winning. And as we've seen with United up front, I know three were scored in the last couple of matches, but Anthony Martial still not scoring, is he? It's not quite happening for him. I know there's more to his game than just goals, and he came back and contributed in the move to that opening goal against Everton, but there's games every 2 minutes. The squad needs to be bigger and it needs strikers.
On Friday, Ten Hag was asked about Martial and Martial's sort of lack of goals at the moment. And he gave an answer saying, you know, he's really important. Russell getting reiterated why Martial is really important, what he offers. But also said Martial can't hope, he said that he cannot handle the physical load of playing every 3 days. Or, you know, use words to the effect of he can't play. You know, you can't do it.
Well, he's also being asked to play 90 minutes every 3 days as well, isn't it? I mean, he's not being asked to because he's being taken off early, but you catch my drift. He's expecting to start all these games. He has to, almost.
Yeah, and Ten Hag said it's not possible. Martial was, for one reason or another, physical fitness, accumulation of injuries, or the fact that Martial at 75% fitness can't do it. But yeah, they need a player, if only because Martial cannot do this. Weghorst makes some sense. So I had a look at, you know, I fired up FB Ref and whatnot. I looked up at some of these things at Wolfsburg, and he was a bit of a pressing machine over at Wolfsburg. In terms of character and spirit, we can understand why Ten Hag likes him. What Laurie said there about Van Gaal and Ten Hag going well. If you are based in the UK and listen to this, I recommend the Van Gaal documentary. That's on Amazon Prime. There's a little moment where Van Gaal meets Ten Hag, and you can tell Ten Hag is just a little bit starstruck. There's like two or three bits where he sort of stumbles over his words, like, anyway, it's Van Gaal. He's here. It's great. It's amazing. And it stops, and Louis goes, thank you. Turns to the Ajax team and goes, right, if I was still here, you'd all be learning Dutch anyway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you can tell those two have had a couple of chats about football recently. Weghorst makes sense in the same way Sebastian Haller made sense for Ajax. So there have been two or three times, I think, towards the back end of Ten Hag's time at Ajax, he grew a fondness for having a physically dominant striker. And the Ajax of the last 2 years crossed the ball a lot more. That worked at Ajax because in the Eredivisie, your average centre-back is just not as good at defending crosses as your average Premier League centre-back. If you did have your doubts about what he did at Burnley, okay, I can understand that. And yeah, he is still largely unproven. And if we're being brutally honest about it, Manchester United don't really have crossing people, right? Rashford wants to cut inside on left and shoot. Anthony wants to cut inside and do in-swing crosses. There's not anyone doing those classic outswingers to the near post that a number nine can crash all the time. So it will need some teething and recalibration if Weghorst turns up. I can just about understand why Ten Hag wants him. I have questions as to how it's going to work if Weghorst does turn up. But I think regardless of who comes in, it's going to be like that because the price point is so... I'm doing a hand gesture here. Weird.
Yeah, but it's complicated to do this deal as well, isn't it? Because you're effectively going to probably end up paying Besiktas as well as Burnley to get this player on loan because obviously Besiktas will have him for the season and there's a few hurdles to jump before he arrives. I sort of asked that question in jest before a little bit because his record actually when he arrived at Burnley back in January from the Bundesliga was very, very impressive. Only Robert Lewandowski over that period had scored more goals than Wout Weghorst in the German top division. Like Carl mentioned as well, his pressing has been a real feature of his game prior to the time that he spent at Burnley. So again, that feels like it'll be useful to Ten Hag if he was able to get Wout Weghorst through the door. However surprising a name that was just to crop up. There's details on The Athletic about it, an explainer about how the deal can be done and why Manchester United are interested. Laurie's written that up with Andy Jones and Adam Leventhal's help, like you mentioned before. There's also a story from Adam about Vincent Aboubakar, who could well be Wout Weghorst replacement at Besiktas, because he's just been replaced by a player whose name that we won't mention at a club called Al Nassr over in Saudi Arabia. You might know who we're referring to. But we mentioned at the top of this section, Andy, about the silly season. Harry Maguire to Villa definitely falls into that category, doesn't it? Can we put that one to bed?
Yeah, because as I understand, he's not going to Aston Villa. It's as simple as that. It's one of these things which catches fire.
He's just playing golf near there.
Yeah, you see stuff on Twitter and it goes wild and people start commenting on it. And you think, it's fine to comment, but it's not actually true. And as a journalist, things should be true. If you're going to write something, it should be factually correct. And my understanding is that it's not factually correct, so don't think Harry Maguire is imminently going to Aston Villa.
No, he was definitely at the Belfry today, though, because my brother-in-law texted me shortly before we recorded this podcast to say that he'd seen Harry Maguire there. But that obviously doesn't mean that he's joining Aston Villa. Maguire's just one of the names being linked with a move away now, Carl. Aaron Wan-Bissaka is another one. A whole host of clubs in the Premier League seem to be interested in him. Even Scott McTominay's been linked with Newcastle, I think, as well. How do you see it sort of shaking down? Because it doesn't feel like United is really a squad that needs a lot of trimming this month with all the games that they've got coming up.
No. I also understand that Anthony Elanga was linked to Everton as well. There is a surplus in certain areas. I think, as I talked to you, it was only the other day, I watched the highlight of the Marseille game and, oh yeah, Eric Bailly. Should probably sort out his future one day. Axel Tuenzebe is another player who could probably have a conversation about what he wants to do with his future. But someone like Aaron Wan-Bissaka was okay in recent games on the Ten Hag, but doesn't strike me as a Ten Hag style player. But also, if he goes, who's playing right back when Dalot can't? Because Dalot's played probably too many minutes of football. And that sort of doesn't quite make sense. Similar thing with Scott McTominay. I don't think he was particularly fantastic in the second half against Everton. Ten Hag swapped to a 5-3-2 with McFred and Bruno Fernandes. But also, if you take Scott McTominay out, then Casemiro and Christian Eriksen are going, hang on, who replaces us in the 75th minute when we're blowing? Because that will happen. That is happening. There's going to be a point this month where Manchester United have to play 3 games in 8 days. At a certain point, you need bodies. And while many United fans go, just sell them and play one of the kids, I think Ten Hag knows when's the best time to promote someone from the academy.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Eric Bailly before, actually. Google Eric Bailly and you'll find a very interesting red card from a French Cup game with Marseille this weekend. Eric Bailly is still Eric Bailly-ing in France. Misses craziness sometimes. Not often, but sometimes. remember, for all the transfer news, keep it to The Athletic. Lots and lots of detail on there every single day throughout January. If you're not a subscriber, a reminder again, there's the offer on at the moment, £1.99 a month for a year when you sign up at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Right, we've just got one last thing on the agenda, and that's the small matter of a domestic cup quarter-final for Manchester United to look forward to on Tuesday. And it's a really interesting matchup against a Charlton Athletic side who is managed by one of Andy Mitten's friends, who is a lifelong Manchester United fan, who I said before has got his name on a seat in the Stretford End, whose dad will be confused about who he's supporting on Tuesday, I imagine, as well, because he's a season ticket holder at Old Trafford as well. Dean Holden, Andy, he's got it's a heartbreaking story, in fairness, that what he's been through as a father, but also a sort of colourful football story and career and managerial career so far as well.
Read it. If you subscribe, read the story. I put everything into it, but not as much as Dean put into it. I've been writing for a long time, and the only time I've ever shed a tear while interviewing someone was when Dean was telling me about his 17-month-old daughter dying on a family holiday to the Canaries. Just like, what do you say to that? And he's such a great lad. He's a United fan, had a season ticket since he's been a kid. Got offered terms at United but chose to go to Bolton Wanderers because he thought he'd have more chance of getting in the first team, which he did do under Sam Allardyce. Played around lots of different clubs. The fans love him wherever he went. So you can see the reaction to that piece, wherever he's managed, wherever he's played. They absolutely love him, and with good reason, because he's a great lad. And he had 3 months out of the game for the first time in his 20-year professional career, and he's now the Charlton Athletic manager. So he went in a pub before their game against Brighton in the previous round because he just wanted to meet Charlton fans and gauge what they were talking about. And they were very unhappy because their club is in a really bad place.
It has been for a while now as well, hasn't it? To be fair.
Yeah, it has.
Considering the years they had under Alan Kirbishley in the Premier League.
Well, they were 18th in the third tier when Dean took charge. And he went in the pub. I love him for stuff like that, speaking to real fans. And in them 3 months, he'd go to all the Man United games and he'd speak to people. He's just a normal lad from Salford who's good at football. And he said, love it if we drew Manchester United in the next round. The next day, Charlton Athletic draw Manchester United. They've sold 9,400 tickets. They're a big club. He's not been back to Manchester since he moved down there. He obviously will be coming back. The whole of Manchester, the whole of Salford wants to be his mate. Any chance you can get us a ticket, Dean? None of these people rang him when he was unemployed 2 months ago. He remembers the people who did ring him. People like Sam Allardyce, actually. Steve Cooper at Nottingham Forest, Thomas Frank at Brentford. They all invited him down, spend a few days there. And he's got a really good humour. And I'm delighted because Charlton Athletic have started winning matches. So they've risen from 18th to 12th now. I hope they get spanked at Old Trafford. Actually, that's too strong. I hope they lose.
Hi, Dean, if you're listening.
He will be listening, though, because he's a United fan. It pulls you up on articles in United We Stand and goes and chats to the sellers. And the first time I actually came across him, this was bizarre. This is 2004, and I knew a lad who went to play for Falkirk in Scotland. And my name came up in conversation, and Dean said, "Do you know Andy? Really?" And next time I went to watch my mate play, I got to know Dean. I've followed him ever since, through thick and thin. And if you lose your daughter, in the circumstances that Dean lost his daughter, it's absolutely tragic. Read the piece, and I think you'll read it and think you want this guy to do well in life because the world is a better place with humans like him in it. It really is.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lovely section of the piece where he's talking about watching the draw when Charlton were drawn against Manchester United. Bearing in mind, like Andy's just said, he's only just taken over at Charlton at this point. Watching it with his son, and then they get Manchester United, and then he's having to ring his dad. This is the line: "I FaceTime my dad, lump in my throat. He's a lifelong United fan. He'll sit there and watch his son lead out a team at Old Trafford. That's going to be incredibly special for them, certainly." Let's talk about the United aspect of it. Of course, people can go read Andy's piece with Dean Holden on The Athletic now. But for United, Carl, what are you expecting? Is this going to be a change team? Because he doesn't rotate much, Ten Hag, does he? Don't think he can take too many risks because they want to maintain the momentum that they've built up in recent times. But he also needs to be aware of just how many games are coming up. It's going to be a team sheet to keep an eye on, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. I think this is maybe a time where one of Casemiro and Eriksen could take a breather. But also, I wouldn't be surprised if Lisandro Martinez started, because Martinez probably needs to start getting some reps back under his belt at centre-back. He had a okay substitute appearance against Everton. There were two or three times when him and Shaw bumped into each other and you're like, you need to fine tune that. So I wouldn't be surprised if Ten Hag went, right, Shaw left back, going to give Martinez left centre back and then another at right centre back just to keep that going. I would be interested to see who plays at goalkeeper because now Jack Butland has arrived.
He's not played any matches this season at all in any competition, so he's definitely not cup tied. So yeah, he could throw him in, couldn't he?
I'm not sure if Butland was a sort of starting one in these things. The way Ten Hag talked before the Everton game, he really said having three experienced goalkeepers is important, not just for games, but for training as well, which is one of those things of, you don't often hear football managers describe that, just that extra
no
the third goalkeeper doesn't just put the...
It'd be good to get them in for training.
Yeah. Like. You know, we often joke that the third goalie's just out there to put cones up. But Ten Hag was like, no, it's really important to have three goalies for training sessions because you want to have an experienced person, at least for your strikers to shoot up against as well. Which I suppose is that thing that Ten Hag does that I haven't heard too many previous Manchester United managers talk about. He has that extra 5% or that extra attention to detail. Or you know, he finds time to make time in areas that you wouldn't expect a Manchester United manager to want to concern themselves with. I really didn't see Ten Hag go, all right, let me go have a look at the academy this early into his United tenure.
Manchester Derby week as well, Andy, so it's vitally important that United get a result that sends them into that game full of confidence still, isn't it? You don't want any sort of complications on Tuesday night, do they, really?
No, it'd be out of order if Dean, who calls himself a United fan and pays for a season ticket, knocks United out of the League Cup. I'd blank him if that happens. come up.
I wonder who'll be sat in his seat.
I know. I think his brother has been going to matches, and his son went to watch Charlton play against Portsmouth at the weekend, and at the end of the game was stood on his seat singing Dean Alden's Barmy Army, and a steward said, get down off the seat, and he went, that's me dad, it's me dad's the manager, and the steward said, all right, fair enough, carry on then. And I love the little incidentals like that. But look, Charlton Athletic are not even at the top of League One. They've had a really poor season. Manchester United should, with respect, be brushing them aside, even making a number of changes. So Bruno can't play, can he?
No.
And Donny van de Beek being injured adds a little bit of a tangent to that position, doesn't it? Because that might have been somewhere where Donny came in and played in the Bruno role. I still think Ten Hag will go quite strong. Still think there'll be a huge crowd there. Really surprised me this season, the demand for tickets, despite all of these home matches. And what else? You're still hearing songs against the Glazers every single match. It doesn't always go reported. And what else? Fans complaining about the way that the tickets are going up. There's a lot of discontent around the Barcelona home tickets. And I know fans will always be annoyed when they don't get tickets. I know the club have absolutely got their perspective as well. But there are all these side issues from having so many home matches. But Manchester United should be beating Charlton Athletic. And I've got every confidence that Manchester United will do that. I hope Dean has a good night. I hope his family have a good night. Maybe, like, get one goal in a 5-1 defeat and then do one back to South London.
We'll see what happens, but hopefully Manchester United will be heading into that Manchester derby full of confidence after making it through to the semi-finals of the League Cup. It's all going all right at the moment, isn't it? To be fair, we're previewing these matches with a smile on my face. But that's it now for Talk of the Devils. Fingers crossed, Carl. Absolutely. For the moment, we'll be back after that Charlton game, but we've just got to say thank you to Andy, thank you to Carl as well for being with us, and thank you for listening at home. We'll see you on the next one. Bye bye.
Athletic.